Welcome to Beans and Breakdowns, a podcast dedicated to bridging the gap between specialty coffee and the heavy music community. On this episode, I'm joined by Maddie Spall of Vitality Roasting.
So grab a fresh cup of coffee and wake the fuck up!
Crew, today I'm joined by Maddie from coffee and from music. So this is we got a double trouble, I guess I would say. Vitality Roasting, and you're in Gnaw?
I am, yeah, and Lack.
And Lack. Okay. I didn't know if you were in Lack or if you were just associated, you know, how
totally
hardcore works now. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I won't completely say maybe some of the borderline illegal things that are happening right now with the driving and the calling, but it's, we're just getting some logistics sorted out. But I'm doing well. Like I was saying earlier, just have a lot of snow and it just got oddly cold for the next 2 days. But otherwise, it's good times.
Yeah.
Are you drinking coffee right now?
I am, yes.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a drip coffee, and I forgot to ask the barista what it was, which is such a bummer. I specifically went to like one of my favorite shops in town because I was like, I'm going on the coffee pod. Like, I want to drink something cool. But it's from Fragment. If you ever in the Twin Cities, it's probably one of my favorite shops here.
What beans do they do? Vitality, or is it a different roaster?
No, they do multi-roaster stuff. Okay, so they're cool. Always getting in new beans, which is pretty cool.
Is there a roaster that they like get that's pretty, I don't want to say like maybe exotic, but out there for your area?
They do like a lot of international stuff. So I don't know all of the roasters that they work with, but I'm never usually familiar with what they're brewing, which I think is a good thing because, you know, a lot of places in town use the same few roasters or roast their own, which is cool, but Fragment's always bringing in something different.
I have a lot of respect for that because it's never cheap to do.
No, and it's super challenging. Like, their baristas are so talented to be able to dial in different espressos every week and make the drip taste good. And yeah, it's really impressive what they're doing.
Do they do like a lot of single origin espressos that rotate as well?
Yes, it's awesome. They always have like four different espressos on the menu. Which is very exciting for a coffee roaster to be able to try like a bunch of different things. So that's always cool.
Oh, I'm very envious of that. Here in Montreal, we have what I like to call espresso culture, which is like the French style of you have one espresso blend and you just do like a lot of espresso drinks.
Oh, yep.
Mm-hmm. Like most places have a mochaccino on the menu.
What is a mochaccino?
It's a cappuccino.
I guess it's just
mocha.
Like a cappuccino, but chocolate. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Which is a very like Euro thing, I feel like.
Yeah. That's funny. That sounds like a made up drink.
It really does. The first time I saw it, I was like, what the hell is a mochaccino? Because I just am used to mochas.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm very envious of that. I really like when a shop goes out of their way to work really hard and bringing in different kinds of roasters, but also doing different single espressos is it sounds super challenging, honestly.
Yeah. My co-roaster Meg, she is a barista there. So I hear about like, you know, how things work there a little bit, and she knows so much about espresso, and it's really awesome to like work with somebody who is doing that. Mm-hmm. Cause I was a barista for quite a while at like a second wave kind of shop, and then moved into a third wave shop, like learned quite a bit about espresso, but then I just got really into roasting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my roasting knowledge is, you know, I'd say I know a lot about roasting coffee and sourcing coffee, but when it comes to like espresso maintenance and like being a really good barista, I feel like I'm kind of lacking in that department. So it's really cool to work with her and talk about it.
I vibe with that. I feel like there's roads when you get into the third wave game that you go down, and it's like a pick your path game where you can go the roasting route, like roasting, sourcing, supply chain, things like that. You mm-hmm. go like espresso maintenance mechanics, and you know, milk mechanics, which is fancy buzzword. And then, and then you can, or you can go the filter route where it's like your life is dedicated to all kinds of drip.
Dude. Yeah. Like the home brewer people that are like really good at brewing their own coffee, like impressed me so much, but I think I'm used to the luxury of just going to the cafe that I roast for. And if I'm like, I want free drip coffee, I'm just going to go to my cafe and like, right. just help myself to a cup. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, you're so right. There's so many different avenues you can go down. And I want to do it all. I do engineering work for like music equipment sometimes, like mm-hmm. very like loosely using that term. Like I fix my own gear. And I've like made a few pedals and stuff, but I'm like, I want to fix our espresso machine. I want to learn how like the roaster works and do all of it, but there's time, you know. Right now I'm on the roasting path, and like someday I'll go down the technician path, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely time for that, especially like learning how a roaster works is, I feel like you learn one and it's kind of everything similar, unless you're working on like a lowering style compared to like the more traditional drum roaster, like a Probat or, mm-hmm. you know, something in that range. But
oh yeah, totally.
Espresso is so weird.
It is.
I don't even drink it that much, but it intrigues me so much, like how it's made.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's crazy.
I'll talk about what I'm drinking.
Yeah.
So I had Bryce on the podcast from, he pronounces it Epoch. To me, it is spelled Epoch. I don't know if you're at a safe place to read this. If you can see.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Totally.
It's Epoch, right?
Well, isn't that word one of those funny words that's like spelled a certain way, but it's like, it might be pronounced Epoch.
It could be. I may be wrong.
I don't know.
Apologize to anybody who pronounces it Epic. I pronounce it Epoch.
I think you're on to something.
Put it in, what's going on, chat? Put it in the comments. So they do a lot of, I would say it's probably the most Scandinavian style shop that I've been in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like how they roast and the, like kind of the mission behind their profiles and stuff. But this is their peaches and cream. It is a natural processed Sadama, which is Ethiopian. And it has some juicy peach and like blueberry orange blossom notes.
Yum.
Very, very, very good. Like I had one of the best pour overs I've had in a long time when I was there, and they did it on a one of the April drippers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their Trace Dragones, which he actually used in the Barista Canadian Championships like a couple weeks ago.
Wow.
So yeah, there's serious business over there. I don't know. It's a little too nerdy for me, I think. But the shop was beautiful and the service was incredible. So props to Epic Epoch Chemistry over in Moncton, which I would say is probably the one of three great things about that city in general.
Cool. Mm. That coffee sounds awesome. We used to have an Ethiopia from that region, and it was like my favorite coffee. But we switched to a Kayon Mountain Ethiopia, which is also really beautiful.
I actually really enjoy a Kayon Mountain. One of the like roasting society here, they're a co-op, so they brought in a huge, I think, importation of Kayon Mountain at one point. So a lot of the roasters were using the same, but putting their twist on it.
Cool.
It was good.
Yeah.
I remember it was like, I tried three variations of it and I really enjoyed like all of them, just really consistent coffee.
Nice.
So yeah. Thank you, Bryce, for the guidance and for just being a great person. So yeah. Do you have a life-changing cup of coffee that you've had?
I feel like it was recently, honestly. Oh my gosh, that's a really good question. I feel like, well, recently I went to Honduras to like meet some of the farmers we've been working with. And we tasted so many coffees when we were there, but there was this one washed coffee that like everybody in the room rated it super high. And it was like probably just like one of the nicest coffees I've ever tasted. And I wish I had more details about it. I have my notebook. I can pull it up actually. It was a washed geisha.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was really, really lovely. But we'd tasted like 30 coffees by then, and that one like still managed to stand out. It was very memorable.
That's I think that's an indicator of like just a very good coffee.
Absolutely.
Man. Do you you remember any of like the profile on it?
Oh yeah. I've got all my notes. It was like mango, and it was really clean but sweet at the same time. What else did I write? Citrusy, apple, chocolate, nice balanced malic acid. It was just really smooth and clean, and the mango really stood out, and the citrus. It felt very like sweet and juicy. I'm a sucker for the fruity coffees. Like I like a nice washed coffee. Well, I guess that was a washed coffee, but like just like a standard cup of coffee if I'm just drinking it. But like if I'm going to have a fancy cup of coffee, I want it to be like a sweet, fruity, juicy kind of more adventurous coffee.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I like a diner style in the right situations.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I do prefer also like just a crazy funky cup.
Yeah.
Like a sometimes challenging cup of coffee.
Totally.
But yeah, that's that sounds incredible, especially having like a Honduran geisha like at the, like, I can't even imagine what that's like having it like at the source.
It was amazing.
Did you taste any green coffee while you were there?
I did. Like the fruits?
No, like, well, yeah, that too. But also like how the Q graders, like how they'll do the green taste. I don't know how they do it exactly. I've only talked to like one Q grader ever.
We ate like a couple of the green beans.
Was it good?
I mean, they're kind of like hard and like, I don't know. We tasted them at a few different points of like the processing, like stages or whatever. And you know, it was okay. I think I got more out of tasting like the cherries. Mm. And, I crunch on roasted coffee sometimes to kind of, you know, you get a little hint of what it's going to taste like, but, I can't remember the green coffee being remarkable, to be completely honest.
I mean, I always have heard that it's like really subtle. Like I've honestly tasted some of the green coffee before it gets roasted, and it's like, this is weird.
I'm like scared for my teeth, you know? Yeah. It's like roasted coffee is like crunchy or whatever, but there's something like dense and hard about like green coffee that it can break a coffee grinder. So I don't know. Might be able to break our teeth.
I mean, you could do like the whole jawbreaker kind of situation where you just let it sit in your mouth and then you spit it out.
Dude, that reminds me, like this roaster in town did for like April Fools. They made like coffee pouches. Like, I don't know if you've seen them at the gas station or whatever, but they make like, it's like the nicotine pouches, like the Zen things or whatever.
Right.
But they made those with coffee in them because, yeah, I don't know. There's this like brand at gas stations that makes like pouches of coffee with like no nicotine in them, just like coffee grounds. And it like gives you a caffeine, you know, whatever. But they made it with like specialty coffee. They used like a really fancy geisha and made like these little coffee pouches for April Fools. They were okay.
You,
it was just a really, really, Yes, they did. I thought it was a prank at first. And then I like went into the like shared roasting space that we work at. And no, they actually had tins of them.
Wow.
Yeah. And you just like let it sit in your mouth and it like kind of brews, I guess, you know.
With your lukewarm saliva. That's kind of
gross. I can't say it was like a pleasant experience, but yeah.
Like you're just like letting this coffee sit in your mouth, like taking tasting notes. Oh yeah, it's very cherry forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was something else. They're so funny.
That sounds like something that Dark Arts would do, honestly. I just saw a video from them today. Their marketing is so good, but they're also so dumb. But they did one where it's like one of the owners, he's got like really nice, like long hair. He's kind of like Brad Pitt looking, but he like makes a shot of espresso, like puts the cup, puts the portafilter, and it's like supposed to look all like cool and nice. Puts the portafilter, makes the shot, and water's just shooting out around like the gasket and everything, like the ugliest turbo shot ever. And then he like puts the lid on, turns around, like wind blowing in his hair, and serves it to you. And it's just like, you have to know.
Like, that's so like, awesome.
It's so funny. It's like that old DeLonghi ad that they made with, wasn't it with Brad Pitt that they did that? Where it was like fresh coffee beans.
Maybe.
I don't know. That was a while ago, but it was very funny. But yeah, Dark Arts does a lot of that like trolling stuff.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Gotta love it. It's all about the
brand. I think coffee gets, it gets taken very seriously too. And I think it's good to kind of like bring light to coffee and like, you know, have a joke every once in a while.
Definitely. There's a roaster here that only shares memes.
That's awesome. I bet they do really well too.
Oh, they do. Yeah. They do incredible coffee. Mm-hmm. They had a Yemen for a while. That was good. And they had one from Yunnan, China. That was incredible.
Mm.
So they do a lot of like very serious sourcing, but then they just, all of their posts is just shit posts.
It's awesome.
Yep. They have their brand.
Yeah. I feel like Vitality kind of like established a certain clientele like that does take it kind of seriously. So I took over doing the social media a while ago and I've been wanting to like maybe make it a little bit more funny, but it's hard to tell what to do with branding, you know?
You just got to take the leap. Just put the first one out and be like, you either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up because the social media for Vitality is, I find it really pleasing. So I think I can understand the clientele that you have.
Thank you. But,
I wanted to see like, is it something that you do or were y'all hiring somebody? Because the videos look really good.
It's me. Yeah. So that means a lot because I think I'm pretty critical. I'm a bit of a perfectionist with stuff like that, and especially running social media for a brand, it's kind of it's got a lot at stake, you know, and I want to be professional and put our best foot forward. And I also like, at the end of the day, I'm like a coffee roaster and like I love the coffee that we're roasting, so I want to like give it the best platform it can have to like reach people and have an impact. So I want it to look nice and cool. But I do, like, I've been in bands for years and I feel like I just translate like my knowledge I've gained from like making merch and like, you know, taking pictures and making flyers and stuff, and like try to apply that to my work Instagram, even though it's different. I still feel like that experience is what's helped me. So I'm glad that it comes across well. Thank you.
It does translate very well. And I think it's a good point that you make about the bands and basically having to learn skills outside of just writing and playing music to be in a band. Like DIY, you have to learn how to do everything and be everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great kind of comparison to why, you know, just knowing how to do social media as a whole would be coming from bands and like having to find your audience. It's same for pretty much anything, I think.
Totally.
What do you find is the most challenging thing about being a coffee roaster?
You're never just a coffee roaster. I think that wearing all the hats is probably the hardest part. Like today I'm delivering coffee, and yesterday I was roasting, and then tomorrow I'm working on like renovating a cafe, and I'm doing social media. You know, there's like so many different things that go into running a roastery that, you know, I remember when I used to just be like a production roaster, and I'd just like show up, roast, go home, and like that was super chill and awesome. And I love how much I've learned from my position that I'm in now. But I think that just like all of the responsibility that goes into it and the gravity of those responsibilities too, because, you know, the coffee comes so far and there's like so many different hands on it. Like, you know, I was a barista, like that's a huge part of it, is like serving the coffee well and like making sure the espresso is dialed in, and then roasting, it's like making sure my roast profiles are good, quality control. There's just so much that goes into it. And the coffee deserves it too. So yeah, I think that that's the hardest part, is you're never just a coffee roaster. You're, you know, creating a platform for the coffee.
That is, that might be the highlight right there. That's just really great. Talking about how far the coffee comes, and then, like, the final product that we see in the cup, that's something that I've talked a lot about before as well, is like that end cup is like a lot of people, I think, take it for granted because it has traveled from, thousands of miles away, and so many people have touched it along the line that it is like it provides income for so many people. And yet it's like so kind of difficult and tricky to work with.
It's years of work too. Like, it's not just like, it's just crazy. I think I learned so much like meeting the producers that I got to. And you know, they're saying like if they plant something, it takes like 3 years for it to, you know, produce fruit. And like that's a crazy long time to be like nurturing this plant and like taking care of it. And then like, you know, you can put all your heart and soul into a coffee, and then if someone, you know, scores it at like an 82 instead of an 84, that's going to make or break how much you're making on like all of this work that's gone into it. And I think it just makes coffee like, there's just so much more to it than we realize. Then I guess roasters kind of think about it a lot more, I think, but it's just important to acknowledge and think about when we're drinking our coffee that it's not just from that day. It's years and years of work going into making that coffee something special.
Right. And it's not just like, the hipster looking barista and, the cool roaster people, but like there's families that rely on
Literally.
like this thing that we just have is like it's either a necessity or a commodity or something. But I find it sometimes I do get in my feelings about people complaining about like pricing and things of drinks and having, but then you get the opportunity to explain like, well, this is why this coffee costs the way that it does.
Yeah, totally.
So, but yeah, we could spend all day talking about that for sure, 'cause
So true. Yeah.
it's like it's even made me want to go into like supply chain management or something like that, but I feel like that's maybe diving a bit too deep.
Totally.
So Vitality, are you one of the founders, or did you like was it already started and you kind of came aboard?
It was already started. I started from the bottom. I was just a barista there for a while, and then I don't know, I just got lucky and had expressed interest in the coffee. And so when we needed more help in the roasting side, I got offered that, and you know, started just doing like 1 or 2 days a week doing that, like studying a lot. And I started roasting 2 years ago, and now I'm kind of like managing it. Yeah, because my manager moved on to other coffee things last summer, and so since then I've been kind of running things, and it's awesome.
So you're a head roaster? Is that kind of the
Yeah.
word? Okay.
I would say that's
And
the I've it's hard to come up with a specific title for what I do, but I think that head roaster makes the most sense.
That's great. So you do source though, like you're doing a lot of like yeah. the sourcing of green coffees and things.
Mm-hmm. We do have like a big importer in town, Cafe Imports, who we do a lot of work through. And then we've been working with Sima Cafe a lot. Andros from Sima Cafe is doing really awesome work connecting roasters and producers in Honduras. So that's who we kind of went through for that. And he's really cool. I've learned so much about coffee from him.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love sourcing, like the whole idea of it. I get lost in it though. Just because I feel like there's so much information, like you're saying, like learning so much about coffee just from like an importer, it's the stuff that importers know is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you get into playing hardcore?
That's funny. I actually met my coworker. Well, my bandmate now, we used to be baristas together. Alyssa, she plays drums in Gnaw. And she needed someone to record her band and knew I had music experience. But she just kind of took a leap of faith and was like, hey, can you record my band's demo? It was something I'd always wanted to try, like recording music. And I, looking back, I'm not like super proud of those recordings, but it's still like, you know, it was the first time I'd done that and the first time I'd done something with a hardcore band. And then once I'd like mixed that demo, I like learned the songs because I'd like listened to them so much, and then like eventually ended up joining the band, which was cool. I was in like an indie rock kind of project in high school, and then that lasted like 6 years.
So you've been playing music for like a long time, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
What was I guess growing up like, were you more influenced by parents, musicians, or was it just you kind of caught a bug, like listening to music?
My parents aren't really that musically or creatively inclined, but I was like an emo kid in middle school. I loved like Sleeping with Sirens and Pierce the Veil, and went to Warped Tour, and I was like, this is it. This is awesome. That's kind of what got me into music. Properly, like I'd always been a big music listener, but I think going to Warped Tour and like listening to emo bands and being a little scene kid was like what kind of made me realize that like I wanted to like pursue it. But I guess thinking back further, like I like when they asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I'd always say rock star. Like I watched Hannah Montana and I was like, yep, that's it. Like that's awesome, she's super cool, I want to be her. Yeah. So it's always kind of been there for me, but, yeah, I like joined my first like fake band when I was in middle school and like we played the talent show and broke up. But then in high school I joined like that, like indie band. And, yeah, that was kind of it. I was kind of in it at that point.
This is such a great conversation because we have touched on two things already that are so important to me. One of them is scene / emo, but like real emo, not what people today would consider, I guess, emo. It depends on what age you are, but
yeah,
you said Sleeping with Sirens and Pierce the Veil, so we know what era that is. And then and then Hannah Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hannah Montana is very important to me.
Really?
Yeah, it's really
awesome.
Funny. Yeah, I like with all the Miley stuff that had been happening and then she dropped a new album, I was like, you know what? Like, I wonder if Hannah Montana still holds up. And then you kind of watch some of the episodes from like, because Disney Plus has all the Hannah Montana stuff. If you go back and watch, it's like very impressive as like a 9-10-year-old that she's able to like act and sing that way. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, she's awesome. And the music holds up too.
It does.
If We Were a Movie by Hannah Montana, such a good song.
This is, I mean, I can't even tell. What about the Joe Bros? Are you a Joe Bros fan?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I always say that Gnaw is FFO Jonas Brothers.
Oh my goodness. This explains so much.
Yeah.
I saw them for the first time and was like late last year or it was late last year. And it was incredible. They did five albums in one night.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
They played for like 3 hours.
Oh my God. That sounds like a dream.
Like watching it. I wouldn't want to do it.
No, no.
But do you know the girl, she plays saxophone for Bill Murray?
I'm not familiar.
Do you know the band Bill Murray?
No.
Oh, you need to listen to this. If you like the like Scene Kid stuff, so it's the guitarist from Attack Attack that used to sing all of like the clean auto-tune parts.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Evan. It's his band.
Wait, what's this band called?
Bill Murray. It's like
Bill Murray. Dope. I'll look them up.
Yeah, it's very good. But they have a saxophone player who she is like, I guess kind of like she was doing like concerts during COVID, like on YouTube streaming and stuff. But mm-hmm. I think she was playing in the orchestra too. So it was very cool to see like the alternative like scene kind of crossover into Jonas Brothers, because I always said the Jonas Brothers were Scene Kids.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's a good take, especially with how they dress too, you know, like they look like metalcore guys. Yeah.
Like the swoopy over the eye razored. Yeah. Low-key always wanted to be the Ford Jobro.
They're so awesome.
So bring back Disney Rock Camp Rock.
Come on. Yeah.
So yeah, that explains so much for fans of Jonas Brothers. Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to write a song, like a title, a song as a nod so that only the real ones know.
Oh, that's so true. Like rip a Jonas Brothers name.
Straight
or
up.
I just gotta like steal one of their riffs, like just sneak it in there somehow.
Now you've got me thinking of a riff that you should steal. It's got to be something off of like the self-titled.
Totally.
Yeah. That's like the most rocking album. This is taking a turn. I've lost so
it
many
really
people
is.
At this point. Or there's so many people that don't want to admit that they also love Hannah Montana and the Jonas Brothers.
Totally.
In which case, live your truth.
Or maybe it'll empower them to like finally admit it.
Stand up and admit it. You love the Jonas Brothers and you love Kellan Quinn. We all know you do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. King for a Day is a regular on rotation music video in my house on music video night.
It holds up.
It does. Mm-hmm. Also,
music video night. That's awesome.
Oh, it's mostly like, I don't know if you're straight edge or not. But
I am. Yeah,
I am not. And my wife is not either. So we'll have like margarita night sometimes and watch music videos for like hours.
It's kind of a dope concept.
It's fun. Like we're just sitting at home watching music videos, drinking margaritas.
I feel like that would be a good party theme, is like everybody picks a music video that they want to like show the group, you know?
That is a great party theme. That's got me, the ideas are rotating now.
Or better yet, you have to dress up from the music video too.
Come on. Okay. That's like a level up. There's a bar down the street from my house called District Video Lounge, and you can literally mm-hmm. have thousands of music videos and you can request music videos for them to play.
That's so sick.
I've never been. It looks scary, but I kind of want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think I'd rather do the party and have everyone
dressed. Yeah.
I wonder how many people would come dressed as Pitbull though.
Oh my God, that's so true.
Everybody's just
that's kind of a good one. Don't let me get down a Pitbull rabbit hole.
Oh, is this a thing?
My username is actually like a nod to Pitbull. Like it's Mad Dog Worldwide on Instagram, but it's like Mr. Worldwide.
So is this ironic? Like, are you doing this ironically or are you truly like a fan of Mr. Worldwide?
I'm going to say ironically, but like semi-ironically, like I still put him on, you know?
There's only like Miami as a whole is like a character of a city, but then you got this one guy that encompasses all of Miami.
Yeah.
Come on.
He's the mayor.
He's the mayor of Miami.
Dolly.
He's, I mean, certified hits though.
Seriously.
This is going to turn into the most random episode. Is we've talked I about Joe's, Miley, freaking Pitbull. I do love Pitbull though.
I feel like admitting that you like these artists is the same as being brave enough to admit that you like diner coffee and gas station coffee sometimes. Like there's like a nostalgia and like a certain like character about it that's like, it's bold to admit, and I stand by it, and I still like really good coffee and really good music. You know, you can have both.
It's a, that I feel that like it's a good vibe. I feel like everyone, like nowadays people are so serious, and then like online they're like, they have to be this serious person. Like I like mm-hmm. all these interesting niche things, but like it's okay to be basic sometimes and like weird shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So since we're on a cringe path, there's kind of a weird deep, I won't say it's loose cringe, but like there's a deep cut emo reference that comes up often between me and my wife, and I need to know if we're not alone. There's a cover that was done by this band called Framing Hanley.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. I'm okay, sorry.
Never mind. It's okay. They did a cover of a Lil Wayne song, and I just needed to know if it was like,
oh my God,
not just if it was like a, I think it depends on how far into emo you were. Cause I had friends in high school that were also like on that, but this was like very early 2000s.
Was it on like Pop Goes Punk or something?
No, I think they just did it themselves.
Wow. That's bold. That's funny.
It was, I was a Pop Goes Punk though. And, Punk Goes Crunk. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
yeah, I'm vaguely familiar.
The Worst Prada did Still Fly.
I got to revisit that.
It was a good time.
Devil Wears Prada is a really good band.
Thank you. I need more people on this. Devil Wears Prada holds up. Plus,
yeah,
with the Dying Wish connection, like very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
You played with Prevention recently?
Yeah.
How was that?
That was incredible. I love Prevention. Yeah, I think that was like one of the most fun runs I've ever been on.
I talked to Evan not too long ago, and he's so nice.
He's awesome. I listened to that episode this week before this to like, not to prepare, but I saw that Evan was on and I was like, dope, this is great. But it, listening to that episode felt like I was hanging out with Evan. So that was awesome.
Yeah. I saw them at Hold Your Ground in September and I was like thoroughly impressed.
Yeah.
Like as a non straight edge person, I love straight edge music just because mm-hmm. it's very nostalgic to listen to Prevention and be like, oh, I remember when this music was everywhere, like the posicore mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
Totally.
So yeah
I love their music. They're one of my favorite bands.
They're sick. Mm-hmm. They make me want to go play in Springfield.
Yeah, that place is like incredible. I don't know what's in the water there, but they're all hilarious and really good at music. Yeah, it was like kind of like an honor to go on that run and learn those songs. Like playing your favorite music is really fun. So that was just like a dream.
That's sick. Did you get to play at Dumb Records?
No, we didn't have a home show.
Okay.
Unfortunately, but that's okay.
I've heard that the shows in Springfield, like I can't remember who played there recently, but they were like, everybody there is just friends and super nice. And it just feels like you're at like this weird like party.
Yeah. It's like an oasis. Honestly, it's like a beautiful, beautiful thing that they've got going on. My other bands have played there. Well, Nas played there a couple times and we just played there earlier in March and it was awesome.
So Nah on Your Mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's been out for like 2 months.
Yeah.
I have seen it before. Like before I reached out to you and realized that you were in this band. Like
that's awesome.
Yeah. But I had like heard it. It came across on a radio and it reminds me a lot of this Toronto band that we have friends with, called Influx. I don't know if you're familiar.
I'm not, but I'll check them out.
You should check them out. Very, very good band. And like, it's very cool to hear a lot of that, like, kind of noisy punk, but still very much hardcore with some moshy riffs. I like this revival of it, where there's a lot of these bands popping up in every scene.
Mm-hmm.
Did you write on Your Mind, but just not the demo? Is that kind of how the relationship worked?
Yeah, I'm like not a primary writer for Gnaw.
Okay.
I wrote some of like the little shreddy melodies and stuff on Your Mind, but Madeline, our guitarist, she writes a lot of the music, and Justin, our vocalist, he's written a couple of the songs. We're kind of like taking a more collaborative approach with our next release. So I've got some stuff I'm working on for that one, but On Your Mind was like, it became a coherent kind of concept and idea, like, without me writing a song for it. So I was like, I'm just gonna let this be what it is. It felt very together. But yeah, it's awesome. And I love the music. So it's, you know, it's fun for me to get to play and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I almost feel like in those situations too, it takes so much pressure off of you, because you just kind of like learn the music and then shred and have fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's awesome. I have no complaints. But I love Gnaw.
Once you put your collaborative stamp on it, it becomes so much more like important to you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you want to put more mosh riffs in it? Do you like mosh riffs?
I'm a sucker for it. I think it's fun. But I also think that we've got like a certain vibe going that like,
yeah,
we've got like, we've been playing our two songs with mosh parts in them, like back to back in our set list for a while, and it's like the mosh block, and it's awesome. But I think I've got to think of the vision of the band too.
It's important.
Yeah. And I think that moshing to the fast parts is fun too.
That's it. Like, so I like the two steps. I like, I think I saw Wild Side, not too long ago, cause they came through with, Best Wishes. And I know, I remember seeing that earlier. So Wild Side.
It's like, I'll sacrifice the cell service for,
for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Wild Side is, it reminds me so much of when I got into hardcore, and I love it so much. So when I saw them, it was like the first time in probably 6 months that I like just straight up two-stepped for an entire set.
Mm-hmm. They're so dope.
And side to side. So I do vibe with the minimal mosh parts, but just straight up like positive side to sides and two-steps.
Mm-hmm.
So I think every show can benefit from that.
Totally. Black is my mosh band. I feel like that's the band true. That people mosh to a lot.
I totally forgot that you're also in Lack.
Yeah.
That shit's good.
Thank you.
I listened to, there's like an EP, right? It's just the EP.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I listened to the whole thing earlier and I was like, okay, yeah, no skips. Like, this is good.
Dope. That's awesome.
What stands out though is the vocals. They're crazy.
Yeah, they're so sick. I love, Noah's been like holding it down in the drum department in the Twin Cities for years. And I think that this is the first time he's done vocals for a band, I want to say, but, it's so awesome. He's just having so much fun the entire time that like, I can't help but like smile the entire time we're playing. It's so awesome working with them.
You know why it's like that, right? He's been trapped.
Yeah, right? It feels like he's like freed finally, and yeah.
Yes. I'm convinced that there's this hidden algorithm in drummers where once they become a vocalist, they're always like the best vocalist. I'm speaking biased because I recently like took up a vocal role in a band last year,
mm-hmm.
and I love it. It's so much fun because every desire that I've had from sitting behind the kit wanting my vocalist to do something, I just get to do it now.
Yeah, totally.
So now we just put all of those vicarious thoughts that we had, we just internalize them and then do it. So yes, I understand now. So, but it's very black metal sounding. And I don't mean that as a diss at all. It just, he's got like a very like black metal-y characteristic mixed with like the hardcore is so cool.
Totally. No, I get what you mean. It's definitely unique.
Yes.
Yeah.
And don't, if you're listening and that sounds like a turnoff to you, please just listen to it. I don't mean for that to throw anybody off at all. Because I also do, I like black metal a lot, but, just give it a listen. It's very cool.
Well, thank you.
So, but you're primary writer on that.
Nope. That's another one where I'm just playing bass.
So you chill. Like you just,
I'm chilling.
Learn the music. I got my bass. I'm just going to show up.
I did record that EP. So that was, you know, I put my work in where it's due.
Yeah.
I didn't record On Your Mind, but all the other NAW stuff. But yeah, no, I am just chilling and it's awesome. Yeah. I've got songs that I've been like writing that like I could use for something at some point, but like, I don't know, like our guitarist Nehemiah just like keeps sending voice memos of like more and more songs to the chat. I'm like, this is fantastic. And he never misses.
Yeah. Just take all the pressure off of me and
God, I sound like the worst bandmate ever right now.
Just let him cook. It's fine. No, I respect that. That's good. What you need to do is start a beatdown band and just write all the music for the beatdown band.
Oh, that would be so challenging.
It's just mosh riffs and like drop C.
This is so true. This is a great like next turn for my career.
Yeah, it's like the it's the origin, like the villain origin story. Like you just start, I wanted to write riffs and then it just comes out with scary, like Knocked Loose-esque weird metalcore stuff.
That's so funny. I get like one of the pedals that does like the bass drop.
Oh,
you can't
no.
trust me with one of those things. I think if I had one, I would just think it was so funny and do it all the time.
I was in a van where the bassist had one and I had to take it away. No more bass drops. Stop.
Oh my God.
You gotta hit it.
Mom said no more bass drops until you do your chores.
Take away the controller. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's when you have that pedal, the intrusive thoughts just start arising instantly.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning of the two-step section, hit the bass drop. Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
Oh, but it's so funny. I guess people wouldn't realize if it was ironic or not.
What are the upcoming plans that you have, whether you're touring with somebody like Prevention or for NAW? What do you got going on?
Well, NAW's kind of in like a writing period, which is awesome. Lack is going to record soon. I don't have any tours coming up. I would like to, though. I'd like to do that again soon. I think NAW is like looking at like booking something in like the late summer.
Nice.
But yeah, we're just kind of chilling for a little while before that. I've got like some recording projects coming up. I'm recording a couple of my friends' bands, should be cool. But yeah, work is like really busy right now. So I'm just trying to like take it easy and, you know, hustle for a while.
The cafe that y'all are renovating, it's already an existing one that you're just updating, or did y'all kind of take over a cafe and are opening it under the name?
We took over a cafe. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's like a lot of the way set up, but, yeah, it's fun.
I like the takeover method over like just establishing a new cafe.
Yeah. It's been a coffee shop under like many different people and stuff for like years. So it's like the spot is established as a coffee shop. It's always been a coffee shop. Right. So I think that's a good location to have a coffee shop.
And you don't have to plumb anything, which is the worst part.
Yeah. Thank God. I don't want to put plumber on my resume.
Mm-mm. I've done it before. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Oh God. Yeah, I can only imagine.
There's cement work involved. It's terrible. Yeah, no, you don't want to do it.
No.
That's cool that you also record. Are you doing mixing as well?
Yeah, I am.
That's very cool.
It's fun. Thank you.
It's weird that you are a coffee roaster and you also record because you're doing basically the same thing for both
Yeah,
coffee and for
literally.
music. It's
Oh,
very
that's
weird.
interesting. I love that though. I really like seeing the similarities between the different creative processes that I get to do. Even yeah, just like yeah, roasting coffee and producing music is very similar. And I think I don't know, like the different, how am I trying to say this? With mixing, a lot of times I feel like you can rely on visuals a lot, like when you're EQing and stuff. And I try to use just like the numbers and the knobs more to like challenge my ear. Likewise with roasting, I try to not look at the profile graph as much and like just use my sensory skills and look at the temperature. There's so much crossover.
Yeah. Maddie, this conversation has been very, very great.
I had so much fun. This is awesome.
I really appreciate you taking time and talking with me in the
Thank
middle of
you.
your work day.
Likewise. Hey, it's been a really nice lunch break.
A long lunch. Well, before we go, let me know what is your favorite city for beans and breakdowns?
Ooh. For beans, I'd say Minneapolis. Like we have so many amazing roasters here. I think SK Roasters, Wesley Andrews, Bragman's not a roaster, but really good coffee. Those are like my top three here. Breakdowns though, that's hard because I want to say, it's hard to think about whether I'm thinking like modern bands or old bands. But I'm going to say the Twin Cities still, because Minneapolis has a lot of cool hardcore coming out of it right now. And I'm proud to be making music here and making coffee here.
So is Twin Cities Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Yeah.
Okay. Historically, that area is crazy, like music-wise.
Yeah, dude.
Like modern
Yeah, I mean,
hardcore owes a lot to like St. Paul.
totally. I mean, Disembodied like really paved the way for so much of the music that we listen to today.
There's a really, really amazing documentary series from Twin Cities PBS. I don't know if you've seen it.
Which one?
It's the hardcore one. It starts off with Husker Du.
Oh, I think I have seen this.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Before I got laid off from my last job while I was quietly quitting, I watched basically every documentary that they put out on hardcore. And like they also put out the Baldies, which
Yep, I've seen that one too. It's really good.
insanely good documentary. So
Yeah.
shout out Twin Cities. PBS
For real.
whoever's running the content at that PBS station, goated.
Yeah, no, that's kind of crazy that they did that. It's
Yeah.
awesome though.
Maddie, thank you again. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you. It's been so awesome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beans and Breakdowns. I want to say a huge thanks to Maddie for hanging out on the podcast. Be sure to check out music from both Gnaw and Lack available on all streaming platforms. And if you're in the US, be sure to check out Vitality Roasting. I believe that they ship nationwide. Don't quote me on that, but definitely check out the website in the description of this episode. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. You can find out more information about the podcast by following us on Instagram at Beans and Breakdowns or on the web at beansandbreakdowns.com. Until next week, be sure to stay caffeinated and wake the fuck up!